From MyDomain.com, this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, I have a real pioneer in the studio with me, Jacqueline Johnson, who is the founder and CEO of Create and Cultivate. It's an incredible company featuring a career-minded nationwide conference and media platform, primarily for millennial women, and it's growing incredibly quickly. They've already held over 75 events around the country with huge speakers and panelists, including Kim Kardashian West, Chelsea Handler, Jessica Alba, who I had the good fortune of interviewing, Chrissy Teigen, plus yours truly, along with my lovely business partner, Catherine Power. Jacqueline is also the author of a new book called Work Party, which is coming out on August 21st. As you might have guessed, Jacqueline didn't start her career with this huge company and a spot on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. No, no. Like many of you, she actually began her career in social media marketing and worked with influencers long before they were called that. It's a really interesting journey and one that I am so happy she is sharing today. Now, on Second Life, it's Jacqueline Johnson. So, Jacqueline. Yay. Let's start at the beginning, go all the way back. Always one of my favorite questions to ask. What did you study in school and what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
So I was a journalism magazine production major at NYU.
Wait, did you know that I did my master's at NYU in print journalism?
No.
Magazine journalism, technically?
I feel like we probably crossed paths somewhere along the line.
God, I love that program.
It was great. It was amazing. And it was funny because I was of the last echelon of people before they launched the digital journalism major.
Digital.
It didn't exist. It was broadcast or magazine.
Yes.
And I think our stories are very similar in that I thought I was going to be a magazine editor. Yeah. I was like, I was interning at Condé. I was like on the road to that life. And that's really what I thought I was going to be doing.
So did you have like a dream magazine that you wanted to work for?
Yeah, I was. So I was interning at Self, which I loved and was really great. And I actually interned a little bit at Traveler, which was so fun.
Wow.
And basically part of my job was like stuffing envelopes with the free trips for celebrities. So it was like Natalie Portman, 5 day stay in the Bahamas. And I'm like stuffing the envelope. Like, this is my life. But I really, really, really wanted to be at Allure. Like, that was really exciting for me. And it's funny because I'm not a beauty person, really. But it just, like, had that mystique and it was super exciting.
Well, they were doing really incredible journalism there. Mm-hmm. And on a side note, Linda Wells just did this pod.
Oh, so funny. I love her. Just launched her new line, which is so,
so
exciting.
Good.
Yeah.
And so Allure was sort of
the
goal in your head.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like intimidated by Vogue and Teen Vogue. I think maybe it was just starting. So Self was really comfortable. Like, I really liked being there. And I was there when they were basically like, what is the internet and like what should we be doing on it? And they were like, can you repurpose all of our magazine articles and put them on the internet? And I was just like retyping stuff for like the internet. It was like wild.
Tell me about your first proper job, like the first thing that you would put on LinkedIn.
So I was interning at Condé and basically I got offered a job, but the salary was so low and I was obviously like coming out of NYU. So I couldn't take it, which was devastating. And I was on Craigslist, like looking for a job. And there was this Craigslist note that said, seeking a female account executive, which now I'm like is full legal, but seeking female account executive interested in fashion, beauty, and the internet. And I was like, apply. Like, and it was for this role at Attention, which was a social media marketing agency, but way before social media was ever a thing. And they basically, I went in and interviewed, and these guys are like, we have this client, Bluefly, and we know nothing about fashion, and we're trying to do this kind of new age word of mouth marketing where we're talking to people on the internet. And I was like, that's cool. And that was my first job. I was an account executive there.
So did you have any idea what you were doing?
Nope. And I don't think they did either, which was really great though. But they understood the internet in a way that a lot of people didn't at that time. And they were like, we should create a Facebook page for your brand. And everyone was like, what? This is crazy. But it was really revolutionary. And they really gave me a lot of responsibility early on because I had all these great ideas. I started my .blogspot at the time, and I was like, look, all these people are commenting on my blog. Like, what if I talked about the product? And they were like, are there more of you? And I was like, I think there's lots of us on the internet. And so it was really like the wild, wild west, like the new frontier of social media marketing. And I happened to be at this company that was really innovating at that time. And by the time I left, I was employee, I think, number 3, and there was like 75 people. It was
That's
crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I always think about that too when people are nervous about sort of going in new directions. And yes, of course, like industries can fail. That can happen. But also at the same time, when you're working for a company that's maybe not quite so established as the Condé Nast of the world, you get to do more.
Yeah. Well, you get
because you're making things up.
Exactly. It's like it's the risk is more exciting and available because obviously you don't have too much at stake because you're just like, let's just figure this out. We'll do it. And, for me, I always try to tell people work at a startup. It's really the best experience you can have, especially like if you're working closely under a CEO, you get to learn every facet of the business. Like I look back at that and I still joke with my first boss at that company because at the time I'm sure I was like, oh, he's the worst. But when I started my first company, I emailed him actually and was like, I totally get you. And I totally appreciate all of the boot camp that you gave me because it was a business 101 lesson, really.
Right. So what did you like about social media marketing and what did you not like?
Well, in the OG days of it, I mean, I was literally in forums, like, commenting with people. I'm like, has anyone tried this new Suave shampoo? Like, it was so funny because it was, like, no one knew, right? So I think at that time, it was really exciting. It was really organic. And I have to say, like, the bloggers that existed back then had such unique personalities. Everyone was so different. I mean, like, there was, like, Jerry Hirsch, who was, like, on there. And then there was, like, Elizabeth from White Lightning. I mean, and there was, like, Tavi. It was, like, there was, like, 6 people. But everyone was so unique and different and really authentic. So I do kind of miss those days because, obviously, now it's commoditized. It's an industry, which is great. I mean, it's
a lot of sameness. Because I think that's one of the things. I love Pinterest, for example. Mm. But I do feel like there's an aspect of everyone's drinking from the same fountain and people aren't going and pulling like these weird references from their own personal things because you don't have to work so hard for it anymore. So it's just sort of this like fire hose of the same stuff that's coming at you. Whereas back in the day, it did sort of attract different personalities.
Agreed. And, I think the reality of that is one, algorithms, right? So everyone's feeding you what they know you're going to like. And then also the fact that's what's working, right? So everyone's like, well, if she's making money and doing things that way, I'm going to do it that way too. And it's working. And there's a reason for that. But I totally agree. I mean, I think it's been an interesting evolution to kind of watch happen and see platforms launch and see platforms go away.
Yeah.
And really see what's like working and what's not working. And I mean, I remember when video wasn't even a thing, like no one was creating video content. And now it's like you have to be online 24/7 sharing your stories. But I think at the time, what I loved about that specific, position was it was new. So everything was an experiment. I remember we launched the Mac and Barbie collaboration, which was awesome. And we did the launch of Origins Organic. And for the Mac Barbie one, it was awesome because they were like, we have these makeup artists and enthusiasts who now are like YouTubers that we should be like gifting product to. And then we should ask them to post about it. And I remember like seeing the artist starting to post about it. And it was like so exciting. And they were like, whoa, we never in a million years thought we should ask them to post pictures or tutorials. And it really was the beginning of this whole content world. So it was really exciting to be a part of it.
What did you not like?
I mean, I think like the hardest thing, like especially when starting out, was brands didn't get it, right?
The education process,
education,
especially with advertisers, took a minute.
Absolutely. And if brands were into it, they were into it and it was great and they like saw the value in it. And then sometimes I just remember pulling teeth to get anything through the door. I was like, this is going to be so great. We have to do this. And it was just like, we don't get it, and we don't see the value.
Or there were these fears of, is this a brand-safe environment, which I totally get. But it went from, for people who don't know, back in the day, like, you would buy a page in a magazine. You knew what that page ran next to. You could oversee it depending on how big the client was and say, like, no, we will only be adjacent to this type of story or this type of content. And then all of a sudden it's the Wild West and no one has any control over anything, which is the great thing about it. But I could see how that was, like,
yeah, I mean,
people then just would say no.
Yeah, they're like, wait, people can write a negative thing? And I'm like, and I remember when it first started happening, brands were like, delete the negative comments. Like, that's how it started. And then eventually it was like, guys, no, I think it's a conversation. And now you're talking to the consumers. And
authenticity is actually much more important. Yes. If they come to this fully scrubbed page, no one's going – that won't pass the smell test.
Exactly. After Attention, I went to iCrossing. And iCrossing is an SEO – well, a very well-known for their SEO practice, which is search engine optimization. It was a search agency, and basically their CMO brought me in and said, we need to start marketing social media. You understand social media. How do we sell and talk about social media? So it was actually a really amazing and interesting job because I had to come in and basically productize and build out a service line. Here's how you sell it. Here's how you talk about it. Here's how you report on it, which was so fun. And again, like a new experience. And then I ended up working with some bigger clients there as well. So like CVS, Mazda, things that were like those big name clients that, you know, previously I'd been in the fashion and beauty space, but I got those on my resume. And then eventually I went in-house at Interactive Corporation, who was a client of mine at my old agency. So what that sort of means is at an agency, you're surfacing clients. And then when you're in-house, you're working as the client. So I made that leap and was working at Pronto.com, which was sort of IAC's Amazon competitor at the time. And it was an amazing experience. I worked under John Foley, who's now the CEO of Peloton, and I had incredible leadership in that role, and I was the social media director, and so was working with them on creating campaigns and things like that. And essentially, the recession hit. So I was, like, on the up and up. I was like, my career is great. I love my job. I love the people I work with. And then companies were shutting down left and right. People were getting laid off, and I remember someone above me got laid off, and I was like, this is it. I'm going to the chopping block. And John basically proposed to me. He said, look, like, there's an opening at a company in Los Angeles, a sister company, same job, same salary, everything. Like, would you ever think about moving to LA? And I was like, no. Like, I'm a New Yorker. I live in New York. Like, this is what I do. And he was like, I really think you could be great in LA. Just go out there. Check it out. So I went out and, you know, loved it. Obviously, once you go to California, it's like you can't go back. And ended up taking this job at the sister company. And then within 3 to 4 months was let go of that job.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So this is in the middle of the recession.
Yes.
So super brutal. Scary times.
And it was like I had uprooted my entire life. I'd lived in New York for 6 years. I had my apartment. I had, like, my bodega. I had all my things, like, in my life figured out. And
I basically I had my bodega. I understand that feeling so much where you're like, no, that one's terrible. This one, amazing.
Exactly.
They look like, identical, but they're totally different.
Totally different. And I had my life, and I was like, this is it. This is my big opportunity to move west. And then, like, wah-wah. Laid off. And then on top of
it. Did you have a plan?
Zero plan. I was in California. There was no marketing jobs. Like, it really is all entertainment. It was like entertainment marketing at Sony, at whatever. And I was like, cool, I have zero experience in this. Like, I'm not going to find a job. I was devastated and basically kind of just moped and cried and sent emails to people like help for like 3 months. And then,
you know, you got to take some time to mope.
Totally.
I feel like that is totally reasonable. Process the loss and then get fired up and do something.
Exactly. And it was.
But I'm also glad that you actually said, you're like, no, it was like 3 months of moping.
Yeah.
Because that's real. Because I feel like there's also this expectation that you like bounce back immediately from a setback. It's like, no, take a minute. You can mope.
Yeah.
It's okay.
100%. And also because for me, it was personally and professionally hard because I had always identified in my friend group and amongst my family as like, Jacqueline's doing so great in her career, like, you know, and so it was like,
oh, that trap.
Yeah. And I was like, wait, I'm the career gal. Like, I can't be the laid off career gal. And I'm in a city. I don't know anyone. I don't have that many friends. It was very difficult time. I mean, I remember at some point I would like just go to the gym to see people. Like, I was like, hey, guys. But yeah, so it was one of those things. And then I got back on, you know, the horse and started sending out emails, like looking for work, and got one or two clients. And then essentially ended up starting my first company, Happenstance.
So you were sending out resumes, but then at the same time also accidentally starting a company.
Exactly. For the first year of that company, I went on interviews. Because I was like, I don't know if this is going to be a thing. I remember so vividly taking so many interviews going in. And then if it didn't work out, I'd be like, anyway, you want to hire my agency? I did that so many times, which was probably so annoying for people. But
hey, can't knock the hustle.
Exactly. And I also thought, especially the first year, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know if this was going to be a company that went on forever. And
so what was the company? Was it consulting?
Yes. So the company was, it was called No Subject. It was marketing and events. So basically, and again, it evolved over time. It initially started as like social media community management because that was like the hot thing. And then it
And also something you totally knew.
Yes, exactly. And then it transitioned into influencer marketing when the influencer market started really picking up. And then it went into events when events started becoming more popular. So it evolved over time for sure. And I had that company for 6 years.
So then at what point did you decide to launch Create and Cultivate?
So Create and Cultivate came about 4 years into No Subject. And basically the premise behind it was
I'm just laughing because I'm like, I love that you have so much overlap with all of these things where you're like, I'm doing this one thing and then I'm also going on interviews and then I'm also creating this other company and then I'm also, and we're transitioning and now it's events and now it's this. It's like,
my parents literally, wow. Like, we don't understand what you do and who you work for. Like, it's so funny because there's been so many overlaps in different companies and things
That's
like
cool.
that. And I just feel like it's like one of those things where you have irons in the fire and you got to see what burns, you know, and see what sticks and kind of go for it. I have so many failed weird businesses that no one's heard of and like URLs I own and like it's just, you know, I think that's the nature of being an entrepreneur is like you got to see like what sticks and when it does you got to go for it. And that really is the story of Create and Cultivate. Was I started it because I had gone through a business partner breakup. It was super brutal with that first company and I was super young and didn't know what I didn't know and made a lot of mistakes and it was a really hard lesson to learn, but I picked back up and I started the company or restarted the company again. And it was one of those things where I was like, I need to find my people. Like, I need to find fellow women who are freelancers, creatives, running their own business. And we all just need to get in a room and talk, because the more I talked about my story, the more I realized people were like, that happened to me. This happened to this person I know. Here's who she talked to. Here's what she used. Did you have this accountant? Did you talk to this lawyer? And it was like this little like kind of it takes a village moment where it was like, if we all start sharing our secrets, we can all be more successful. And
also, you know, lift each other up, because then you know, oh, well, this company, like, they never actually pay, but they'll contract, or like they're trying to offer me this and you that, and like know what your rate card is. And it just...
Absolutely. Especially when you're first starting your business, it's funny you said that, is like, this person doesn't pay. Like, that's something that happens all the time when you're a freelancer and you're starting your first company, is like people just won't pay you. And they know you don't have the money to get a lawyer, and they know you don't have, like, you know, the fight in you to kind of go after them, especially if they're like larger companies.
And you want them to pay you again in the future,
exactly.
In theory. So
yes.
It's like you don't want to. This is a dream company in many cases that you've been courting for a long time, and you want future business from them. So you can't like make a huge fuss. It's
totally
terrible.
It's terrible. And it's something everyone goes through. And so essentially, Create and Cultivate started. It was 50 women at the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. And it was a combination of inspiring talks and, you know, sort of networking and teamwork. And we did some workshops and things like that. And
wait, how did you know how to put that together, how to fund it, how to program it, how to get the people there, how to execute? Was it just you? Explain all of this, because this is crazy.
It was – so it's a much smaller – that was a much smaller production than it is now. But I had no idea what I was
50
doing.
50 people is like a small wedding.
It is like a small wedding. Basically, I pulled together all my resources and got amazing people to come speak and host workshops and things like that. And we didn't have money for decor. So what I did was I took – I don't know if you remember that, like, neon painter's tape.
Yeah.
And I just, like, put it all over the room and, like, little shapes and designs and things like that. And then I potted my own succulents and, like, put all these, like, potted succulents out everywhere. And I literally put little placemats and branded pencils and things like that. And we charged a ticket price, which included an overnight stay. So we did like this overnight stay thing. And I think it netted out to us making like $100 a person. Like it was not that much money. And we basically covered the cost of the event itself. Like there, it wasn't ever supposed to be a business. It was just like, this is fun. We're doing it. It's networking. We'll see how it goes.
I'm just going to put on an event for 50 people for fun.
Yeah.
That was really how you were looking at this.
Totally. Yeah. I was like, I think this will be great. And I think it'll be fun. And I also just want community. Yeah. I was feeling so isolated. And, you know, being an entrepreneur is isolating alone. Moving to a new city and then becoming an entrepreneur is extremely isolating.
Yeah. And how did you come up with your guest list?
It's so funny. So I put tickets on sale and just blasted it out to like my Facebook network. And I should show you the first invite. It's like the most heinous thing you've ever seen. It's awful. The people who came were mostly people I knew. And I remember there being like 10 people I didn't know and being like, oh, my God, who are you? Like, how did you hear about this? And it was just really one of those things. After that, it was pure word of mouth. It was like everyone talking about their experiences and then people emailing me and being like, when's the next one? And I was like, I don't know. That was a one and done situation. I don't know if I can do it again. And it took me about a year to do it again and kind of try to figure it out. And at that point, some brands had emailed and were interested. And I was like, huh. And I always joke because one of the first brands that came on board and paid was Levi's, which, coolest brand ever, was so excited and like couldn't wait to slap their logo on that because I was like, this gives us so much clout. And I just remember they were the presenting sponsor for $3,000. And I just remember like our contact just like running her credit card and was like, yeah, we'll do this. But it was like
that was just a line item.
It was like just a line item.
Like they've spent more on catering.
She goes out to dinners. I know, totally. Dinners were expensive than that. But it meant the world to me, you know, and it was so exciting. And then after that, we had Warby Parker, which was great. So we got all these really cool brands involved early on.
Did they come to you or did you go to them?
They came to us, which was great.
Whoa.
Yeah. And we were lucky because it was females in the company who were like, this is cool. We need to support this. I mean, the person who made the Warby Parker connection happen was Jen Rubio, who's the CEO of Away. It's just amazing because it was all these women who were in junior, mid-level positions who just put their name on the line and was like, we should do this event. And that's really what made it happen for us. And honestly, even though we were getting brand dollars at that time, it still was like full losing money every single time.
So what did you do? Like, how did you figure that out? Did you raise money? Were you self-funded? Like, how did you put a team together? Were you doing it all yourself? Like, what?
Yeah.
And the nitty-gritty, this is so fascinating.
So it was 3 to 4 years of me just figuring it out, right? So it was ticket sales combined with brand dollars, but it was not making any money. Like, it would break even. And I remember we did one New York event where we lost money and I was like freaking out because I just was chalking it up to a marketing expense for the agency. So it was like, this is our like little project, side project for the agency. And literally what happened was my employees came to me and they're like, so do we work for Crate and Cultivate or do we work for No Subject? And I was like, I mean, it's the same thing. And they were like, I don't think it is. And it was one of those things where
they had to tell you.
They had to tell me, which was so funny. And they were like, I think Crate and Cultivate could be like its own thing. And I was like, no. Like, I don't know how to do those like events that big. And the agency is doing well. And this is my thing. And then
So let me just point this out to everyone in case you somehow have missed this. So you are operating two businesses simultaneously. You have No Subject, your marketing and events and social agency, and that's going full tilt. And then Create and Cultivate is also happening on the side in your mind as just sort of like in conjunction with and in support of your agency.
Exactly.
Until your team points out to you that maybe Create and Cultivate is its very own thing.
Exactly.
Like, did I get that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And it was one of those things where enough people in my life were coming to me, clients of No Subject, were like, I think you should do creative cultivate. And I'm like, I don't think I should. Like, I was like, guys, I was like, it's losing money. It doesn't make money. And they're like, but I think it could make money. And essentially, that's the way I ended up getting my business partner with Create and Cultivate was I was friendly with Raina Panchansky, who's the CEO of DBA. And we had known each other for years. And over the years had been like, we're going to work together someday. I don't know how. We'll figure it out. And it was one of those things where Raina was like, Create and Cultivate. And I was like, you too? It's a side project. It's a passion project. It does not make money. And she was like, I think it could. I was like, let's do one together. I'll show you what it, you know, we're doing. And she's like, okay, fine. We'll do one together and see how it goes. And that one was the one where we had Emily Weiss, Ami Song, Julianne Hough. It was our first big event. We had 300 people in Los Angeles. And it's was a runaway train after that. It really was like, we couldn't sign paperwork fast enough. We were like, let's do this. We both invested money into the company. And we're like, we have to hire people and this is a thing. But I was still running No Subject. So it was running two different companies. So Raina's running DBA and now helping with Create and Cultivate. I'm running No Subject and also doing Create and Cultivate on the side. So it was basically two part-time people starting this company together.
So at that point, how many events were you doing a year? And why do you think that LA event was really the catalyst?
It was such a massive turning point. LA, I think we had maybe 7 sponsors involved, which was massive for us. Like, I mean, we typically had 1, if anything.
And again, were those all inward bound or were those... Did you have a list of, like, let's go out and target these 10 brands?
All inward bound. So the thing I say about Create and Cultivate, which is so funny, my first company, I was, like, knocking on everyone's door, hire me, hire me, hire me, we do this, we do that. Create and Cultivate was the first time I'd ever experienced someone being like, hey, I want to work with you from different brands. And I didn't know how to handle, like, I was like, people I've definitely emailed before are now emailing me back and not realizing it's me.
Wow.
And they were so excited. Like, people had such a visceral reaction to Create and Cultivate. And those first sponsors, I mean, some of them are still partners today. I mean, we had Bare Minerals, we had Splendid, Glossier was a partner, and it had just launched. It was unreal. I think back to LA, and it was that LA event was such, like, I cringe and feel nauseous thinking about it because we ran out of water. I remember that. Like, we didn't have enough gift bags. I don't think it was air conditioning. It was so hot. There were so many things that went full wrong and were so embarrassing. And I remember we got so many emails afterwards, and I was just like, this was terrible.
Did you feel like that was the end?
I didn't feel like that was the end.
You thought you could come back from it.
I just was like, okay, now knowing this, like, we need way more bathrooms. We need 2 times the amount of water. Like, I just learned so much and still learning, to be totally honest. I wasn't an event planner. I just kind of figured it out. And our team was tiny. I think we had like 4 people there. And it was one of those things where it was like such a learning for me. And the good news is our audience was so awesome that it wasn't like malicious feedback. It was like, hey, for next time, X. And it was great because we took all of that to heart. We built our business based on feedback, like, truly. Yeah, after that one, the emails were crazy. The excitement was there. I had to build a site. I don't even think we had a website. Like, we didn't even have, like, an Instagram handle. Like, it was insanity. And from there, I think we did another event that year in Chicago. And then the next year, I think we did 3 events. And then now we're doing, like, 50-plus events a year. I mean, not the conferences, but, like, different types of events. So it's – the trajectory's been amazing.
And then how have you known how to build your team? Because I feel like that's one of the things that a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are so interested mm-hmm. in. It's something that I always love hearing from other people because I think it's a skill that, A, you just kind of have to learn it on the job, but everyone does it in their own way. And there's no real class for it. And you learn things the hard way. And so I'm always interested in how did you know, like, what positions to hire for or what qualifications someone should have? If you've never had an event or experiential company and now you're creating one, how do you know what skills you should be looking for in the people you're hiring? How did you handle all of that?
You know, when it comes to the hiring process, one thing I've learned over time is I used to try and sell people on the job. I was like, look, we're doing this, and then we'll do that, and this and that. And what I realized I should be doing is, like, kind of almost, like, being brutally honest about what the position is. I think one of the things I've learned over time is people look at Create and Cultivate, and they're like, that is a dream job. It's glamorous. It's amazing. You're, like, with Kim Kardashian. There's so many Instagrammable moments. And the hard work doesn't translate through the social of our company. And so what I realized was is I needed to be, okay, so I'm literally stuffing gift bags. I'm literally, like, picking up trash on site. I'm, like, helping with HR. I'm doing this, and I'm the CEO. It's all hands on deck. Like, everyone does everything. This is, like, a 9-to-9 job in the sense that, like, you're never turned off. Like, we work weekends. Having that transparency up front, I think, has made our hiring so much better. And I will literally get emails after interviews that are like, thanks, but no thanks, which I'm glad. I'm like, great. It's not a mutual fit. And it's the people like, yep, that's what I want. That sounds great. And I am ready to, like, blood, sweat, and tears for a company. Then I'm like, great, you're in the door.
And it's interesting, too. I do think there's something about transparency that is mm-hmm. so important. Like, I remember my very first interview for Elle Magazine. It was with Robbie Myers, the editor-in-chief. And she was asking me what I liked about the magazine. And I was telling her all of the things, like the arts and the pop culture and the front of book and this and that. And she just looked at me and she said, you know that you will not be working on any of that. That is not what this position is for. And I was like, yes, that is. But to me, that was fine. I didn't care. But I also appreciate the fact that she was being very upfront about the fact that, like, that those were not the sections I was being hired to work on and to level set that in my own brain. And I actually think that's such a kindness to do. And I also think it's really important because in this super glamorous world that we work in, people can have these ideas. But I always say, like, we hire very entrepreneurial people. We hire people who are comfortable wearing multiple hats. I always say the worst thing, the thing I never want to hear in our office is, that's not my job.
Amen.
And if you don't have that attitude, that's okay. You know, there are generalists, there are specialists, there are people who work well in a startup environment, there are people who work well in a corporate environment. There's no judgment there, but let's be honest about what the actual business needs are and what the culture fit is like, because it's just so we've done that in the past where it's like, we hired people from magazines who didn't have a really digital mindset. And even though their ideas were great and they're great people and they're thoughtful and interesting and all that, the pace is so different. And you just have to work through that. And that's not to say that it can't translate, but you have to be the right culture fit, have the hunger, understand the company, or else it's not going to work for anyone.
1,000%. And also, we travel all the time together. Like, you're on the road with these people, and it has to be a good fit for everyone in the community, junior, senior, mid-level, whatever. Like, we have to have that sort of bond. And I think it's, one, it's personality-driven, but it is also, these women are crushing it and doing such an amazing job. And if we throw someone into the mix that's not going to be at that level, they're going to get eaten alive. So it's really about knowing the balance, knowing your team, their strengths and weaknesses, how this person can amplify that, and are they that right fit?
Yeah. So, very important question. What kind of boss are you?
Oh, God.
And has that changed over the years?
I think it's probably changed a little bit in terms of I was in my 20s running No Subject. I was so personally attached to everything. It's not healthy. It's not good. I was emotional. I was very emotional about business, which I think is fine. And I think it's important to be emotional about business. But to the point where it was like, I took everything so personally. I've definitely grown out of that phase. Now it's like, I joke, but like literally the building's on fire. And I'm like, all right, so next steps for this are like, you just get used to putting out fires professionally as a CEO. And you get better at doing that. And you get better at foreseeing problems, you know, in that sense. But I think in terms of myself, what I would like to say is I'm not a micromanager, but I'm very much in the weeds. Like, I care about everything that goes out from a newsletter to a social post to everything. And it's one of those things where I'm always working towards, how do I elevate from this position, but I am so stored up and scrappy that it's really difficult to do.
And it can be hard because then you bottleneck stuff because you need to see it, but there's so much to see and so many other things to do. It's a really hard thing to let go of. So in this Instagram perfect world, we tend to always focus on all of the positive and lovely things, and I think that's great. However, I also think it's important to actually examine some of the tougher stuff. So I was hoping maybe you could tell our audience about a mistake you made or a hard point in your career. Maybe it was that founder breakup. Maybe it was, you know, running out of water on a larger scale, but something that really felt like, oh man, that did not go well, and how you recovered from it.
Yeah. Again, breaking up with my business partner was a huge pivotal moment in my entrepreneurial career.
And how did you know it was time?
It's a combination of things of that legally I'm not like totally allowed to talk about, but it's also something that was so normal, like, after the fact. Like, I felt like it was the end of the world, and I was so ashamed and embarrassed more than anything that I was like, I'm a failure. Like, this was a failure. And it wasn't. It was an unfortunate parting that had to happen, and we went our own ways and did our own things, and it was life goes on, you know, and our clients were fine. The business recovered. Everything was great. And I think it was just one of those lessons where I was like, I need to understand businesses holistically. And I need to understand the business side of the business and fall in love with the financials because I was always the creative. But at that point, I think I was 24, I literally YouTubed QuickBooks videos, how to set up QuickBooks, how to get online. I was like Googling P&L and like, I need to understand this. And it wasn't fun at all, but it was the best lesson I ever had, because I, at the end of it, I did. I fell in love with the numbers and I became obsessed with knowing what's coming in, what's going out, how does this all play into each other, revenue streams, all these different things. And I really took a crash course in business. And so previously I was the creative, the ideas person, you know, finding all the influencers. And all of a sudden I was like, I have to be this full picture CEO. And now it's funny because that's part of the job I really enjoy. But, you know, I think it's just one of those things where it's like sometimes you have to learn the hard way. And even with CNC, I mean, there's still so many lessons and nightmares I learn. I mean, some of the biggest ones that we've had is our Chicago conference, the second one after Los Angeles, all of our decals said cultivate, create, like all of them. And we're like unrolling them. And I'm just like, crying in the corner. I'm like, oh my God, how did no one catch this? Such a nightmare. And just like copying, putting it to the front, like Jimmy rigging the whole thing. It was so bad. And then little things like Grance DeRay was speaking as our keynote and her chair broke like halfway through her keynote. And I'm just like running to the stage with a chair. I was horrified. It's just like things like that.
But like that's also real.
It's so real.
Like it's just like everyone, it happens.
It happens. And like you, I joke in the book, but I say like, all the mic feedback, just like, mic's not working, mic's going wrong. Like, I remember Chelsea Handler speaking and her mic kept doing this weird, like, whoop, like, every time it was going to her mouth. And I was just like, fix it. Like, I'm mouthing to the AV guy, fix it. Like, so bad. But it's just, like, it's par for the course. Like, you have to make those mistakes. And also just know it's going to happen. Being an entrepreneur is really, you know, running and jumping off a cliff blindly and just hoping for the best, you know, and trying to figure out how to open your chute, like, on the way down. But it really is the most exciting because everything's on the line, but the most stressful because everything's on the line.
It's like extreme sports for your career.
It literally is extreme sports for your career. Like every day I'm like, put my helmet on. I'm like, let's do this.
I hope I make this jump.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question, which is also my favorite question. If you could go back in time and speak with 20-year-old you, what advice would you give yourself?
I would definitely say don't be so hard on yourself. I think for me, anytime something went wrong, anytime, you know, I didn't win a client or I lost money or an employee quit or whatever it was, I was so hard on myself and really took everything personally. And I did that for a little too long. I think it was one of those things when I had to realize and step back and say, everything's going to be okay. You've got this. And also understanding that that happens. My parents are entrepreneurs, and there was like within 6 months of starting my first company, we had a loss. Like the month was a loss. And I was like, well, shutting up shop, we're done. Like, that's it. And my mom was like, oh no. Breaking even is, like, fine. You'll lose money, you'll make money, and you'll break even. And, like, that's part of it. And I just didn't know. I failed. Like, this is it. And it's one of those things where I think you can't be so hard on yourself. You have to know there's ebbs and flows to entrepreneurship. There's good months, there's bad months, there's good years, there's bad years. And I think it's just about enjoying the ride a little bit more and not being so hard on yourself.
I love that. That was founder and CEO of Create and Cultivate, Jacqueline Johnson. If you like today's show, please subscribe on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate us and review us and hopefully say nice things about us. As always, I really appreciate the fact that you guys are so generous about sharing your love for this podcast. And if you feel like screenshotting us and putting us in your Instagram or tweeting about us or, you know, just sharing the love, that would be really amazing. We always want to know who you'd like to hear from on this show, so feel free to send in your request via email. You can just send that over to secondlife@mydomain.com, or you can DM me on Instagram. I'm at Hillary Kerr. For more interviews with inspiring women like Jacqueline, head on over to mydomain.com, where we have so many more stories for you to peruse. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you have been listening to Second Life by mydomain.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.